Hi there, it's Doug. I just wanted to pop in before the show gets started here. I have a couple things to share, and it's kind of story time, so I don't have any stories prepared, but we'll see if I go on a tangent. One thing I want to let you know about is Camp Fi Rocky Mountain. I am speaking at week 1.5, so this was the last week that was added, and it's, if I remember right, it's July 7th through the 10th, which is unusual because that is a Monday through the Thursday. And well, it's in the middle of the week. So it could be challenging for some people's schedules. For other people, it might work out better. One cool thing, and actually I'm not sure if this is going to be like public information by the time the episode comes out. I'm recording this a little bit early, but anyway, there were some open spots for speakers. I know Rachel Richards is one of the other speakers, but I invited a friend who lives in Longmont to also speak, just like, hey, there's an opening, try to help Steven out to get some folks speaking there. And he said yes. So like I said, I can't mention who it is. I don't think if we know it by the time this episode comes out and it's like publicly available, then we'll put it in the show notes and all that stuff. But we'll certainly put a link for week 1.5. So if you want to come and hang out, that is a great time to check it out. The cool part also is like Rocky Mountain, Camp Fi Rocky Mountains, the weeks that are out there. It's, you know, 1, 2, and 3, and then 1.5 was added later. Basically, like people are coming in from out of town, and there's just like 5 people from all over the country that are kind of hanging out around the Front Range, Colorado area here. So it's a good time to come a little early or stay a little late and have overlap with potentially like new friends or people that you already know. So definitely check it out. Check the show notes to see if it's public who this mystery person that I'm talking about. And I want to give a shout out to Ghost Bed. They've been working with us for a while. And actually, June 2025, this is the last month we'll be working together, but they do have some cool new stuff. They actually have some changes in their line. They reimagined their collection, and they've been in business for 20 plus years. So they kind of took a different look and, you know, went back to the drawing board and they made some changes. Now we have the Ghost Bed Luxe, and that's a little bit softer. It does have some of the sort of like top cooling potential, and that all the beds have like, a cooling layer in there. And there's a lot more information on the website, by the way. One of the cool things that they have changed is they make sort of the middle third of the mattress, like where our, you know, the main weight, I'm pointing all over my body here, but the main weight of our body, the sort of trunk area, the torso, is I think that's what it's called. The torso area, most of the weight is there. So there's a little more support there. And if you happen to be a side sleeper, you toss and turn like myself, when you turn over on your side, it's a little softer around your shoulder. So that kind of conforms a little bit better. And I haven't tested one, but it looks pretty comfy from what I understand. And if you do check out the website, you'll be able to see exactly what I'm talking about. There's diagrams and pictures and that sort of thing. They also have a 3-minute sleep quiz. They do have many mattresses. So if you're unsure which one to pick, you can take the sleep quiz and kind of get pointed in the right direction. Like I said, Ghost Bed's been working with us for a while, but we'll be parting ways. You know, it was a good relationship. I was able to meet Rich and hang out with him. He's our point of contact over there, but definitely check it out. Still have the ads running through the end of June. If you want to support the show in other ways, like maybe you already have a mattress, you already bought a Ghost Bed and helped support the show, I'll put a link in the show notes. So if you want to check out other products that we recommend, usually there's some sort of affiliate commission. So if you purchase something, then Mile High Fi gets a small commission. So with that said, I will be trying to figure out like, hey, we need to get another sponsor. If you happen to have a company that is willing to sponsor the show, that's cool. You know, you can go over to Buy Me a Coffee. That's sort of like the purest way. I think it starts at $5 per month. And we have a handful of supporters that have been donating there, and it helps pay for like camera gear and like t-shirts and stickers and other stuff like that. Hosting software. Actually, when I was looking back, the software is actually one of the most expensive things that we have to pay for. And it is, yeah, it's just one of those things that makes it easier to produce the show. We do light editing. Producer Chris pulls out some of the mistakes and all that kind of thing, but it's fairly minimal, but it's much easier to use the editing software overall. Okay. I need to tell you one other like pretty exciting thing. So when I started YouTube a few years ago, probably like 2017 or so, I did live streams. I did a lot of live streams, and in the beginning, a lot of people just didn't show up, but over time, you know, more people showed up. We would have some community. It was a good feeling. People would ask questions in the chat. And I have thought about doing this for Mile High Fi. And for whatever reason, maybe I didn't want to work on the lazy book. And I thought, hey, why don't I add something complicated to do instead of writing the book? So in the month of June, I'm giving this a test. I'm going to do 4 live streams. I think by the time this episode comes out, there will have already been a live stream. The plan is to do them on Wednesday mornings, 9 a.m. Mountain Time, so 11 a.m. Eastern, and it'll be live on YouTube. I'll send out an email to let people know. It's good to set a reminder. The thing is, a lot of people won't be able to catch it live, but you'll be able to watch it later, which is kind of fun. I know a lot of people can watch it at double speed. I think it'll be pretty fun. Potentially, folks will be able to pop on and join, like ask questions live, like on their camera and that sort of thing. The chat will be there so people can ask questions there. I asked my friend Kristen Knapp to join me with this, you know, live streaming experiment. It should be fun. And the thing is, Kristen is a broadcasting professional who's used to talking, ad-libbing, and filling time. So I think she was going to be like a perfect match to do this test. I think as we get our footing, it could be, you know, if it works well, then maybe we have like other guest hosts pop in here and there and join us. Or, you know, if Kristen's out, then someone else, blah, blah, blah. We'll see how it goes. The cool thing is there's no like obligation. It's just a test. And I think it could be pretty fun. The other thing is like, I'll be like trying to promote it in the Camp Fi Facebook group and the Economy Facebook group. So because I know Steven and Diana, and I was like, hey, like, we're not stepping on each other's toes here. We're cross promoting, blah, blah, blah. So there's a good chance, like a few people might show up, a few dozen people might show up, and it'll be really cool to have you on live. So do check it out. We'll put a link, and if you go over to the YouTube channel, you'll be able to see the upcoming schedule for live streams. I'll probably just schedule like, you know, a week ahead of time, so you're not overwhelmed, but you should be able to see it. And we'll have some light topics to talk through. Like I said, Kristen and I should just be able to BS back and forth. But if you're in the chat, then you can ask questions and that sort of thing. So I think I covered everything that I need to. It was fun recording with Joe. If you see him out across the country, he's at different events. I think he goes around and travels quite a bit. I think we talk about it a little bit in the episode, but he travels and he does meetups and stuff. So keep an eye out. He has a Facebook group. He has a book out there. Joe's a fun guy. It's just, we could have talked for like 2 or 3 hours here. I wouldn't let him go. And then he was like, I gotta get out of here, man. One last thing. There's a leaf blower situation. So while Joe's a professional, you know, he records in his basement, his mom's basement. And he was like, you know, the leaf blower's coming by. And because we were like kind of a little bit short on time, basically we're like, you know what? We'll go through it. So apologies for that. It only lasts for, I think, less than a minute or so, but we know it's there and we're sorry. Sorry about that. Okay. I think that's it. If you have any questions for the show, doug@milehighfi.com. Questions will be great for the live stream. So if people aren't there live, you can send them in and that will be very helpful for us and give us something to talk about. If not, we'll just make up questions, but we want to have yours. Those are really good to work with. All right, that's it. We'll catch you on the other side or the next episode or whatever it is. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I invited my good friend Joe Saul Sehy to join me today. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm so happy. I'm here to announce my retirement. I finally made it to the Mile High Five show. What else is there to do? I mean, there's nothing else to do.
This is, yeah, the height of podcasting out there. Although I was reading some of your bio and your intro, and you retired from the Plutus Awards because you won the Best Podcast Award twice. Is that accurate?
I was told I couldn't win anymore.
Okay.
they made a rule that somebody else had to win. So yeah, they made a rule. And now the rule is that you can only win a Plutus for Best Podcast once, and then it goes to somebody else. So I have the rare distinction of having won it twice.
Two times. Congratulations. Well, we could go on and on with your intro here, but you were a former financial advisor. 16 years.
Yeah.
What did you do before that?
Before I was a financial advisor?
Yeah.
I was basically a money F up. I was horrible. I was working. So it took me 7 years to graduate with my bachelor's, and I was the first male in my extended family to go to college. And so I had no help. My parents hadn't gone to college. I thought I need to work three jobs and pay my way through it. So I took just a few classes at a time and struggled my way through. Now that I've been in finance for a long time, like now that I know the key to how to finance an education, which still wouldn't have been perfect, but would have gotten me out of there quicker so that I could start making money sooner and living my life sooner, I would have done it more quickly. But yeah, so I'm working a ton of part-time jobs. I was building radiation walls at a cyclotron, which was an interesting job where they're splitting atoms, you know. I was working at a water treatment company. The salesman sold water softeners and stuff, and I was working in their telemarketing area, calling up and scheduling the appointments, working for the Michigan State Development Fund, helping the university raise money. So I'm working all these crappy jobs. And then a friend of mine graduates from college, a guy named Marcus Wilson. Marcus, who's still a financial planner today, Marcus said, and this is a direct quote, Doug, "We normally don't hire people like you, but I think you'd be good at this." And it was funny because, so it's this job being a financial advisor. And so I take the test. I'm pretty good at taking tests. I was always fascinated by finance. And I talk like the guy next door, you know, who isn't the finance guy. So my practice did really well. I won this award the first year called a Mercury Award that our company gave because I excelled as a first year advisor. But it's just because I could talk about money as a guy that didn't know money. You know, I was competing against these finance majors who would talk about all these terms that nobody knows, like the terms that drive me crazy still today, like small cap, mid cap, large cap. I remember in my initial training, somebody just explained to me, large cap just means large company. I'm like, oh my God, like, why don't we just say it? And now it turns out, as you know, that it's more technical than that. But generally, to get your feet wet, just knowing some of those terms. So being able to talk to the average person about money was kind of my superpower.
Interesting. And I'm tempted to dive down into more questions around that. But what we're here to talk about today is the habits of the happiest retirees and just some things that you have observed. And I'll go on a quick tangent. At the end, we play the sound check, and Joe and I talked over 10 minutes about national parks. So that's why I'm like, I got to stay on topic, man, or we're going to go somewhere else. We're never going to cover anything.
You and I know how to rabbit hole. We're very good at it.
So you did a talk at Economy. It was the opening, right? And I was like, this is great. You have good energy. You're a wonderful speaker. And it was a great way to set the tone, and you hit a lot of topics that I'm very interested in that we cover on Mile High Fi a lot, because really it's a lot of this stuff is beyond finance. It's more lifestyle,
sure,
mindset,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. So I'm just going to kind of let you lay the foundation of kind of the talk and the ideas behind it, and then we'll dig into some details, again, habits of retirees and things that we could take either as we're approaching retirement or if we've already retired and we're like, we need to integrate some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think it is this case of beware what we ask for. I opened that talk with this Wall Street Journal piece that I saw, which was a wonderful piece with some incredible experts on aging and on money management. And they were talking about the horrible statistics that happen when we retire. And their conclusion, the Wall Street Journal, was don't retire or you'll die. Like that, which is,
yeah.
And I'm speaking to a group. How many people do you think there are? 500 people? At I'm speaking to like 500 people in an economy. And I'm like, who wants that in your plan? Like, we're all here to retire early just so we can get this shit over with, you know?
Yeah.
Not at all what we're looking for. So if we don't want to die, we already know that we're fighting this uphill battle against what happens to the average person. And another stat that I saw last, maybe August or September, really ground me was this idea. I first saw it in the Wealthy Accountant blog, which is a great blog, but he was talking about this idea of a healthy life expectancy. And you know, Doug, you and I, we've heard of life expectancy for men, late 70s, women, early 80s, blah, blah, blah. We've heard of that. I'd never heard this term, healthy life expectancy. Like, that was a metric I'd never considered. Even being a professional in the business for a long time and helping people model this stuff, I never thought about it. Healthy life expectancy is this idea that you're healthy enough to actually do the things that you've been putting off your entire life. You know, someday I'll get to do this. And the healthy life expectancy in the United States is like 66.1 years. 66. So if we live a normal retirement, right? If we're not even talking about retire early, the RE, we just live a normal retirement. We retire in our mid-60s. A bunch of us are going to retire right into not able to do the stuff that we truly want to do. So this idea of putting it off while we work a job that we hate, live a life that we're not happy with, is something that is pretty disturbing. And then there's a case of beware what we ask for, though. So when we think about retirement, I also pose the notion that maybe we think about this wrong. Like, we think about, I'm going to finally, you know, I give up this job that I hate and waking up at, you know, the crack of dawn. I'm going to sleep in till 9:30 every day. I'm going to do whatever I choose during the day. I'm going to throw my Google Calendar in the trash, the virtual trash. I'm going to get rid of all that. Well, all the statistics show that if you do all of that stuff, and Christine Benz outlined this with the first chapter of her book, that if we do this, bad things happen. This is what creates the early death scenario. A guy named Ken Dykewald talked about the average retiree who lives that life. And it's really neat. Whenever I talk about this, the biggest retirement only workshop in the nation is in Seattle. It's called Retire Meet. And it was funny. It was all these retirees, Doug, and these are normal retirees, right? And they're talking about how to extend their money longer, what the issues are around retirement, you know, Medicare, health issues that might come up, extending your money, making Social Security work for you, all of these things throughout a big one day event. It was amazing. So I'm talking to this group of retirees and I told them the statistic I'm about to share with you. And I got this huge head nod. Like, everybody had this huge head nod. So Ken Dykewald talks about this. You retire, you have this big party, and now it feels like a party. And the average retiree has 18 months of pure euphoria. Just this incredible, I can't believe I'm finally here. This is amazing. This is wonderful. And then at roughly the 18 month mark, you have the deepest depression that you will have your entire life, because it's an existential crisis of, is this it? Like, did I wake up? Did I retire so that I can wake up at 9:30 and do nothing every day? Like, is that why I retired? So there's a little bit of beware what we ask for. And then there's the cultural norms. And then I'll stop and take a breath here for a second when I get done with this part, Doug, but this also fascinates me. The cultural norm of, we see somebody in their 70s who is working a job. And what's the first thing we think? What are they still doing here? They must have done it wrong. Yet we read Christine Benn's book and she talks about, if you treat retirement like a job, but it's a job that you love, if you do stuff that you're passionate about, but maybe not for money anymore, but maybe more for community and involvement and purpose and feeling, then we'll get more out of life. But the big problem there is that We think that that's bad in society if somebody sticks around. We think you should isolate. Like if somebody's out at a lake by themselves in their 70s, that's kick-ass. That's not kick-ass at all. You're going to die. Like that is horrible. So that's bad. So you see people that, number one, give up friends and move to a new region because they've had this as their bucket list. I've always wanted to move to Arizona. I say that because I don't want to move to Arizona ever. I love the desert, like to visit, but yeah, not for me. So I've always wanted to live in Arizona. Let's go live in Arizona. So I wait till retirement. I leave all my friends. I leave my entire social network behind. I go to Arizona to a place that I've never spent any time. And it turns out I freaking hate the weather. I can't stand the desert for long periods of time. The brown makes me depressed, let's say, or Seattle, you know, let's talk about that. Like it rained. People are like, oh, Seattle's beautiful. Well, maybe not in February when it's dark at 3:30 in the afternoon and it rains all the time. So you get there and it's not what you expected. Or, and I'll stop after this, another thing that we see is people chase their kids if they have children. They have kids, kids have kids. Oh, I'm going to move close to the grandkids. And again, you give up your social network, you give up everything, and you move to the place where your kids are with their grandkids. And you think your kids are going to have dinner with you every night. We're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And it turns out your kids have busy lives of their own. They don't want to see their parents every single day. Even if you're super cool, they don't want to see you every single day. And more than a free babysitter, it's difficult. In fact, there was a great piece in The Atlantic recently, though, about how grandma and grandpa are tapped out and about how for the average person, daycare is so expensive, they're relying more on grandma and grandpa. And grandma and grandpa's longevity is getting smoked because of the fact that they're taking care of the grandkids. Like I got a buddy, Mike, who just became a grandparent, and he takes care of his grandson, Leo, 2 days a week in his semi-retired state. And he's freaking exhausted, dude. 2 days taking care of the grandson a week, and he's exhausted. So, you know, there's all these things that we, quote, wish for in retirement, which aren't the thing that maybe we need to think harder about what we really want and how to make this a successful retirement.
There's so many jumping off points here, but I want to ask you about your retirement. So you did you had a mixed career early on, and then you got into the financial advising for about 16 years. You were on TV some in Detroit, right?
So right. Yeah, 9 years.
When did you retire from that? Because you're working now. You're an author, you have a podcast, you probably do some other stuff that I don't need. I mean, you're a speaker, you're a professional speaker as well. So like when you retired, how long did you take a little break? Can you talk about that a little bit? And then we'll pause there. Cause I think if I ask you too many questions, it'll be,
no, this is really interesting, Doug, because I probably, like for you, it's been a journey. You know, and I just got done interviewing a woman, Bonnie Hammer, who's the vice chairwoman at NBC Universal. She, back in the day, was the queen of cable. So she created Suits, she greenlit The Office, she ran the Sci-Fi Network. Like, this woman's done everything. And she was talking about this idea of explore your passion that we tell young people is BS. She says, explore opportunities. And it's funny because she was giving that advice on our show to young people, but I think it's the same thing for people as they get close to retirement. Like, just look for opportunities. So for me, when I sold my business, my wife loves what she does. So she works with kids. She's in medicine. She absolutely loves it. People call my wife the baby whisperer. And I'm not joking. You put a baby in Cheryl's hands, the baby calms down. This baby's been colicky all day. It is incredible to watch my wife with babies. And so she loves doing this. The business is starting to wear her out. So she thinks 7 or 8 years from now, she's going to be ready to fully embrace, you know, whatever the next chapter is. But for me, at age 40, I sold my business. I got this great email from a friend who was leaving the company. And have I ever told you the story?
No.
He was leaving the company. And he gave like this notice letter. Well, we didn't have that type of firm. It was the type of place, dude, where you leave with the client files at midnight. And then it's like that. I don't know if you remember Jerry Maguire, the show where the agents are all calling the clients at, you know, 5 a.m. So that's the type of firm it was. It was weird. And he said something that was really neat, which is, I really like financial planning, but I don't love it. I feel like there's other doors that are open to me. And he actually used the phrase, he said, I think I have other mountains to climb. And he said, unless, you know, Shirley MacLaine is right, and she believes in reincarnation, for people that don't know, and I get to do this over and over again, like, I got one shot. So why would I keep doing the thing that's 85% when I should be out on this path looking for the thing that's 100%? And that really hit me. He had done a nice job of saving, and he explained all this. He'd done a nice job of saving at a runway. He certainly wasn't financially independent, but he was well enough off that he could take some time to go explore. So he went out and explored. And what was funny was, we thought he was being metaphorical when he said, I have other mountains to climb. He climbed Mount Everest twice. He's climbed almost all the tall peaks. He now runs an adventure travel company not far from you in Boulder. Loves his life now. He found his 100% thing. I don't know if Chris now will ever retire, because Chris is doing the thing that lights him up. And guess what? He makes money while he does it, which is great. Chris is a people person, loves travel, loves hiking, loves this thrill of mountain climbing. So that was that. So I looked at that. I was turning 40 and I said, you know, I like financial planning. I don't know that I love it. I love the media stuff I was doing. The Channel 7 stuff was really fun. And I was hosting the company radio show locally in Detroit too. And I thought all that was really fun. But sitting face to face with clients, that was good, but frustrating for a number of reasons. And so I decided to sell my business at 40. And then I explored, to directly answer your question. So I thought I was going to go back to school and become a high school teacher and a track coach, because I had enough money that now I could just do the thing I thought that lit me up. So I went back to school, and I found out from professors and my friends that were teachers and the teachers that I shadowed during my post-BA education program at Texas A&M, I learned that I'd be fighting administrators and it was going to suck. It was, God bless teachers. Like, teachers aren't allowed to teach. Most great teachers I know are like, I can't teach the way I want to teach. I would love to do more, but I can't. And I had this one teacher I was following who said, never let your students know that the emperor doesn't have any clothes. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, if I send anybody to the office, nothing good happens. So I have absolutely no power. I will tell them that bad stuff's going to happen when they get to the office. They're going to go to the office and nothing's going to happen. Like, nothing. And they're going to learn that I have no power. So this woman was a badass, dude. You walk into her class and her whole demeanor was, don't F with me. And as the session would go for an hour, because I had to shadow people as part of my training, she would get better and better and better. I mean, it became more and more fun. And so the students learned, if we don't mess with Miss Murray, we'll have fun. If we mess with Miss Murray, we won't. That became their carrot. And that's how she was able to get a bunch of stuff done. But I decided that wasn't for me. At the same time, I'm at home and my kids are coming home and I'm in shorts and a t-shirt to make a little extra money and to have fun. I had all these friends, because I'd done so much PR stuff. They're like, can you write my client newsletter, my financial planner friends? Can you help me with my scripts when I'm on TV? So I would write them, and I found out what a good rate was. And I start doing the math and I'm making more per hour than I would have as a teacher. And I'm teaching people about money. Like, I'm having fun teaching people about money. So then I'm like, okay, what's a thing that combines teaching, which is where I thought I wanted to go, giving people the aha that I love seeing people light up when they get this new understanding of a financial concept, and I can do it my way. So then we created a blog. The blog became the podcast. Podcast gave me the opportunity to be on the Mile High Fi show. So that was
all led back here. What a long play.
Jeez. Yeah. I'm sure it's been your life. I'm sure Doug was like this too, wasn't it? Just follow the opportunity. Yeah. Follow the opportunity.
So I had a consulting job for about 10 years, was dabbling online, and I got laid off in 2015. And it turns out I didn't like working for other people very much, and I liked working for myself, and that worked out great. So that's only been obviously 10 years ago at this point. But, you know, by then we were kind of on the right path. And probably 5 years ago, I started doing maybe like 20% less work each year, kind of intentionally, and like winding down the business. So that's been great. But essentially, like what you mentioned, opportunity was on online, or was with online business. And it was interesting. And I think I have about a 5-year-ish, give or take, shelf life on a project that I'm working on. And then, you know, it's exciting at first as you're learning. And then you kind of get into the monotony of it. And then I start adding on something else. So as time has gone on, I've added like a podcast and then YouTube and then like trying to improve interviewing or just having these conversations. And when it comes down to it, it's like, this is a good social interaction, right? Like we get to hang out for a little while. We're working, but we're also just catching up with friends and that sort of thing. Yeah. So I'm not sure where things lead exactly, but as I've continued to do less work, I'm like, I really enjoy that. And part of it is like, I've been able to practice and I've had like a good community around me, which is one of the points I want to get to. So the power of connection, and you kind of mentioned a thing that some people do when they retire, and that's like move somehow to isolate themselves. And I'm lucky here in Longmont, and there's a lot of people that are retired, and I'm not necessarily an introvert. I'm kind of in the middle as time goes on. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to call myself an introvert because that's painting me in a box that I'm like, I don't know if I want to be in that box. But
yeah,
the power of connection is super interesting and it's becoming more apparent. So can you talk about like your experience? Are you an introvert? Like, how do you manage this?
I'm totally an introvert, which surprises everybody, but I lose energy from this. I enjoy the hell out of it. Like I think about, you know, I'll think about how fun this was for days and weeks. And so, but it doesn't give me energy. It lights me up, but afterwards I need to be by myself for a few hours. Yep. Like after Academy and being on the main stage, dude, I was like, oh, thank God for a couple of days with an Xbox controller in my hand, just in a dark room by myself. And it's funny, but it doesn't light me up. But I've learned that, you know, I mean, by the definition of introvert, it is what gives you energy, and being alone gives me energy. But it also, too much alone, I've also learned, is just absolutely horrible and is horrible. I got to go out and be around people and I have to have community. But what's cool is over time, you learn what community fits you and what community doesn't. You know, there is a great documentary I'd recommend everybody watch that's on Netflix called Join or Die. In fact, I feel lucky. I just found this and I wrote to the creators and they're coming on Stacking Benjamins in July. We're going to do a decumulation week, and this will be part of decumulation week on Stacking Benjamins, because an important part of decumulation is those years that you're decumulating. How do you also live this rich life? And the way is community. And so you have these two families. You have the family that you're born into, and then you have this family that you develop. Cheryl and I, for a couple of years, moved away from Texarkana, Texas, where we have no family. We moved back to Detroit. We found out what was weird was that our friends, a lot of our friends that we had in Detroit that we were excited to move back to, had moved on. We're doing things that we weren't congruent anymore. We made new friends there. I was really excited to get close to some people like Andy Hill from Marriage, Kids, and Money was my neighbor. And so make some new friends. But we realized after a couple of years that our true family was here. Like this was where our community was. So we moved back to Texarkana after this long, weird road trip. But the statistics, the first half of this movie is all about politics and our nation and our national fabric and how joining stuff is just good for us as a country, good for us as a people. But halfway through, it switches gears and it says, you know what? Screw society and what's good for society. Let's talk about what's good for you. And some of the statistics are amazing. You have a 50% smaller chance of dying in the next 12 months if you belong to a group. The happiest retirees, when they monitor happiness, belong to at least one group formally, like a Rotary, a religious organization, Kiwanis, whatever it might be. They're part of one affiliate group. And then they volunteer for at least three other groups where they'll just, you know, the pancake breakfast, I'll just go help out, or I'll go help out with the cleanup day along trails in town or whatever it might be. So I've got those. They also travel alone a fair amount. They travel and see the world, but they travel at least once per year with people that aren't in their immediate family, which, by the way, was complete anathema to me. Like the idea until a few years ago of traveling with anybody but Cheryl and my kids, like no freaking thank you. I don't want to be on your schedule. I don't want to see the stuff that you want to see. I don't want to have to spend as an introvert, this is my, you know, week to get away or whatever it might be. And I'm going to spend my time entertaining you. Like, no, thank you. And then we started doing these trips with people. And I found that they felt the same way I did. They wanted to travel with me, but if there was time that Cheryl and I want to go do our thing and they do their thing, that was great. If we're going to stay at the place longer, they'll just find an Uber separately back. We didn't have to hold hands the entire time we were seeing this thing. And that was really, now traveling with other people's become really, really, really fun. So statistics like that, the importance of community on our longevity, even as an introvert, becomes much, much, much more important than I think any of us ever thought that it was.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So a couple of things I want to highlight. One, the travel with people outside of your family. I'm trying to remember, like occasionally I would go meet up with some friends, but it's been several years. And very recently, Brad Barrett from Choose FI, he pulled a group together and we went out to Breckenridge. And it was super cool. Like some of us knew each other, some of us didn't. It was about eight of us and very fun, like so much fun. Like everybody's out of their like normal routine and element. Great conversations. Like some people were more early risers. Some people wanted to do more stuff outdoors or whatever, but it all worked out fine. To your point, it's just like, no one needs to babysit anyone else. It's just like, we make it work. And like some people enjoyed cooking, so we ate in most of the time, which was pretty cool. But yeah, everyone had such a blast. Like I'm like, okay, I need to recreate this in other ways. And like, I'm sure, you know, there'll be like a reunion type thing. But later on, I went to actually Breckenridge again, but in the winter with a smaller group of people. So it was only like me and two others. And that was awesome too, where it's just like little snowshoeing, like no expectations.
Awesome.
Super fun. Have you done any, do you have any trips to share like that? Like, have you been doing this?
You know what? For this reason, I really like Camp Fi. You know, I mean, I love Camp Fi, and I've become bougie enough as I get older that I'm like the idea of going to a retreat center that's made for junior high kids and, you know, sleeping on a little thin mattress. Like I'm like, Steven, no way. And between him and our mutual friend, Jordan Grum at Doc G, like they talked me into it and I had a freaking blast. And now I've gone to three of them and I would totally, I see myself doing that. Fairly often because it feels like a group of friends. I love the idea of pushing past the fact that I don't know any of these people, which gives me hives when I first get in there and I don't know hardly anybody. And then at the end of the weekend, just wanting a group hug with all these brand new friends I have is pretty awesome. Like not even pretty awesome, really, really awesome. Like the people I know now because of Camp Fi, it's been so fun. And of course, on a bigger scale, you know, economy. Economy is even harder for me as an introvert because you get in a room with 500 people. You're like, oh God, no. You know,
it's intense.
Yeah.
Very intense. Okay. So that's super cool. And I'm curious about groups. So are you officially in any groups? Can you talk about that? Because I was like, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I maybe don't do quite enough, but I do a couple things. So I'm curious how you implement this. Yeah.
It is super powerful. I did this before I knew this was a thing. We first moved to Texarkana. There were sidewalks in front of the high school. There's another high school in town, across town, that during a football game, a dad and his daughter were killed crossing the street to go to their car. And we don't have any sidewalks. And I went on this campaign and just telling everybody as I saw them, I'm like, it's so stupid that we don't have sidewalks. And my friend John, one of the early people I met, his kids were on the swim team with my kids at the high school. He goes, you know, this group called Partnership for the Pathway. And it's all about building these healthy walking trails. By the way, it turns out another friend of years of mine, Chad Carson, does the same thing in South Carolina that I do in Texarkana and is as passionate about this as I am, which is we need these walking spaces. So I joined this group and begin advocating for walking spaces. And so I go to a meeting once a month. And between those, I've taken on more and more responsibility. For a few years, I was the president of our organization. When I moved back to Detroit and then came back, now I'm back on the board, but I'm not the president. But I absolutely love the idea of making our town pretty. And what I found out from this was a couple things. Number one, I found out that walking trails aren't just, for me, it's just a beautiful place to go, you know, relax, but it's healthy route. It's safe routes to schools for kids. So there's a trail in town called the Nix Creek Trail, and there's an elementary school at the north end, the middle school in the middle, and the high school's on the south end. And when I go out there running in the morning, Doug, I see kids on this trail away from traffic that are going to school. And because there's a ton of them, it's an incredibly safe place for them to be to get to school. And when we started advocating for trails, people would freak out. They're like, I don't want a trail going behind my house because now I'm going to have thieves and crooks and whatever. You do the studies. You see the studies about trails. Trails decrease crime because of the fact, and this isn't universal, this is like 98% of trails in America. Trails decrease crime because there's bad people that want to do bad things are worried that somebody's going to come walking around the corner. So they don't want that. Crime actually goes down. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is a money guy. This one actually did surprise me, but it shouldn't have, was that trails are the least expensive thing improvement a city parks department can do. It costs the city the least amount and it raises property values the widest. So not the most, but it increases because trails are so long and linear that houses along the trails, people coming into town that are buying houses want to buy those houses. They want an easy place to get to the healthy living stuff. So I learned all that. But my initial reason for getting involved was actually different than that. I believe for a long time, I can't know everything about everything. So I just follow what smart people do. And what was amazing was I worked with some incredibly intelligent clients when I was a financial planner. I worked with a woman who negotiated with the IRS on behalf of Chrysler. And this can get into the role of a financial advisor. Why the hell does she need a financial advisor? That's smart people surround themselves with smart people. The head of the minivan platform, Chrysler's known for their minivans. By the way, my office was near the Chrysler headquarters, so that was there. Also, we were close to the Detroit area Microsoft office, the sales office. Some of the most brilliant Microsoft people in Detroit were my clients. But what I noticed about all of them is they were philanthropic. And I noticed that they spent a lot of time giving back to their community. And so initially, it was for me, it was this idea of, okay, if I see smart people do this, why am I not doing it? And I didn't even try to do the math. I didn't know about this, what I know now about longevity and health and mental health and being a part of a community. And by the way, then learning how to lead, learning how to follow, learning how to disagree with people. Like, we can't disagree anymore, Doug, as you know. You go online and it's people talking about, quote, them. And the more you get involved with these local organizations, the more you realize there's no them. It's just us that grew up a different way and has a different viewpoint. And so why aren't we learning about each other? And if you and I know each other and we're in a room together and I find out that you vote a certain way and I vote a different way, I'm much more likely to be respectful and I'm going to have a growth mentality and go, why the hell does Doug believe that? Doug's a super smart guy. So there's all these benefits. I didn't know any of those. I just knew that I needed to get more philanthropic. So the way that I started, because this was my problem, I didn't care about anything. I was like, God, I feel like such an asshole because I just don't care. Like, what's my mission? What's the thing? What should I get involved in? So I had this client that was the head of the Arthritis Foundation locally in Detroit. My mom has arthritis pretty bad. And so I said, okay, this fits. It helps my client. It's something that my mom cares about. So I just said, I'll volunteer. I'll spend some time. And man, it's funny. Once I dug in, much like I do with trails now, like I know everything about trails and all the ways they help you, I found out about juvenile arthritis and the problems that kids have around arthritis and how debilitating it can be. I find out all the problems with arthritis and the issues they have even doing research on arthritis. Like, there's so many complications and so many people that are great people that are afflicted with this thing. I got excited once my feet started moving. So I would say, if you're hearing this and you don't know how to start, just go join something and you will find out again, that opportunity thing that Bonnie Hammer talked about on our show, like just find the opportunity and let the doors open where your interest, you know, where you find interest.
Awesome. A couple things I want to highlight there. One, I think we're pretty similar because I'm like, I don't really give a shit about very
yeah.
much stuff. As I peel back, this is something, you'll be my therapist in this. I think I'm fairly nihilistic overall, and it fits me well overall. I'm pretty happy, but I realize like it has its pitfalls, but I don't want to dig too deep. I'm afraid of what I might find, you know, but anyway,
right.
We did have something here recently with the HOA, which I've alluded to a couple times in shows. I'll give people just a little glimpse because I did a couple things, which it's a good example of what you explained. So we have some prairie dogs out here in common area. It's like public access, but anyway, prairie dogs are kind of a political issue in Colorado and many other areas because they eat the grass and they're a natural part of the environment, but it's also tough for humans to coexist nearby. And eventually, like the colonies often grow and they end up like eating all the grass, and sometimes they hurt vegetation and some other irrigation stuff, that sort of thing. So a new board was in place in the HOA. Everybody loves HOAs, right? So
right. HOAs.
New board was in there and they were like, all right, we're gonna exterminate them in like whatever, 2 months. This got a lot of people engaged. And we were like, hey, I like the prairie dogs. Like, I understand something needs to happen, but like, is this our first option? So anyway, I'll skip many of the details. There was a side group that got together and were working on stuff, an alternative to maybe have them stay there, maybe relocate them, all pros and cons. There's no perfect solution. But there was a lot of like butting heads. And I'm like, we live in the same fucking neighborhood. Like, you have to figure it out. Like, you can't just email each other, talk past each other, misinterpret the emails, and just like go fucking talk to each other. So one thing that I did, very engaged in the group to come up with an alternative aside from extermination, which, by the way, they gas them. So they suffocate them and it's carbon monoxide. It's sad, right? A little sad. While that's going on, there's the board, they're planting trees and doing other activities, things that need to be done. So I volunteer to work with the people that are perhaps the biggest proponents of the extermination. But then, of course, Joe, we figure out like they're normal people. We have some common ground. They don't hate animals. It's just there's some background information. So what I was able to do is like, number one, like build a little connection. And then also like bring information, like I kind of stepped away from like both parties. And I was like, hey, you guys, you should probably talk and like have a fucking coffee and stop sending emails. And like, I think there's going to be common ground reached. And it turns out like everyone has a soul. Right. Like, they weren't just like, hey, let's just like gas all these little prairie dogs. But to your point, like there was a group involvement, but I also was like, hey, these are smart people. They're not idiots. Like, why do they think what they think? Why are they pushing for this? And you get a little bit more background information. And I mean, many things, there's no perfect solution. It's just a series of compromises where it's like, can we all kind of be happy? But the hard part is like, we're kind of acclimated with social media where they were just like shooting emails, and it was a disaster to do it that way. So anyway,
it was Matthew McConaughey on his recent book tour, who was like, you know, I think we're all more alike than we think we are.
Oh yeah.
Which we would know if we joined, but what's the thing? And they start off this documentary by saying this, you know, I'm not a joiner, right? I mean, that is the thing. I'm not a joiner. It has become cool to go, yeah, I don't think I want to go to that. Like, you hear HOA, you hear PTA, you're like, oh God, no. Like, I don't want to get involved with those people. President of my kid's soccer league, hard pass. Like, forget about that. But so find the thing that lights you up. It's funny because this idea of having a purpose that's bigger than ourselves. A woman named Anna Corwin did a lot of research. She was at UCLA, and she has a book out, by the way, called Embracing Age, came out in 2021, where she studied Catholic nuns. And Catholic nuns live, I believe the number is like 10 years longer than the average person. And the reason, and you know, there could be a lot of reasons, but the main reason that Anna came up with was that they have a mission bigger than themselves. They are responsible. They have a reason to wake up every day. Cheryl has an uncle who's 92, going on 93 years old, and is in pretty good health for a 93-year-old. He has never worked out. He's had the worst, like the worst problems with his blood pressure, and just he's always looked a little pasty. And definitely, you don't look at this guy and you go, "That guy's going to live for a long time." You don't get that idea. He, can you hear that? Sorry.
Just a little bit. Is that a leaf blower?
Yeah, out there? Of course. The second we start to do this. All right. If it's all right, I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
But he's writing his memoir, and he was a guy that was a respected professor, and he also got into genealogy. And so his whole life, Doug, he's been curious. And because he's curious and because he's got this audience that he's hoping to continue to entertain, this guy wants to get out of bed every day. And I think when you look at what Anna's doing, you look at what Uncle Bill, as we call him, is doing with his life personally, you look at a lot of this. You know, there's the study at the nursing home where half of the nursing home had to keep a plant alive and the other half was just left to their own devices. And you know what happened? The people that had to keep the plant alive, a mission bigger than themselves, even though it's a tiny mission, live longer. So just this idea of being in this group that means more to me, that means more than me. Trails have done so many cool things. Can I break some news here that we haven't told anybody? And you know, nobody's going to go, "Wow, I can't believe that's breaking news. That's huge." But it is huge for me because I just did it because I was worried about my kids, right? So working on trails led me to end up going to this group called Leadership Texarkana. And basically we're a town of 65,000 people. And like most small towns, community dying, right? The downtown was dying. All of the, you know, strip mall world along the highway, the town's about 3 miles south of the highway. The downtown was just empty on a Friday night. There was nobody down there. It was funny. I start going to these meetings and I find out that everybody thought downtown Texarkana wasn't safe. So people would not go to, if you asked anybody in town, where's the least safe place? It was downtown Texarkana. You look at the police data, Doug, the safest place in Texarkana is downtown. You know why? Because nobody's there. Because literally nobody's there. So this is maybe 15 years ago, Ruth Ellen Witt, Leadership Texarkana, starts going, you know, we have all these smart people. Let's stop the brain drain. Let's get together. We love living here. Let's make it a place where we want to live. And so Leadership Texarkana led to a group called Downtown Texarkana. There's Beautify Texarkana. There's my group, the Trail Group, all of us working on making this a beautiful place. And now you go downtown on a weekend and it is packed. But because of my involvement with trails, I got to know the city managers. I got to know the parks managers. I got to know Ruth Ellen Witt at Leadership Texarkana, Ina McDowell at Downtown Texarkana. I know the people. In fact, it's funny. I work from home. A friend of mine was laughing a few weeks ago and goes, "Dude, you don't know anybody in town, but everybody you know is like the who's who. I know the dude that leads our, we have a symphony, believe it or not, but I know Andrew Clark, the president of the symphony. I know the conductor of the symphony." Like the people that are interested in this town, I know. So the city just got a $2 million grant for an incubator project that they're calling the assembly line. The core of it is it's a WeWork space for businesses. They have to be invited that are up and coming, exciting. Because it's Texarkana, a lot of them will be, you know, still blue collar-y kind of small town stuff, but they're working on this cool stuff and maybe a new way. The city manager 3 weeks ago, took me to lunch and said, "I want to propose something to you. Would you give up an hour a week to help people with new media, like creating videos, social media, creating podcasts, that type of stuff, teach these people in exchange for, we will build out a studio for you at the assembly line. It's a WeWork space. It's an invite only WeWork space. You will pay no rent. Everybody else has to pay rent. I won't have to pay any rent. We want to use the fact that you are here as the biggest podcaster in Texarkana by far. You're the guy everybody talks about in town that knows what he's doing when it comes to this stuff. We want to, it's a long, narrow build out. They're going to have a studio in the front that is dedicated Stacking Benjamin studio. They're going to have a speaker out on the street, which increasingly has more foot traffic so that people can hear how professional people are at. They've never listened to my show apparently because we're not that professional. But all this stuff is happening that I never wanted to my brand and the city getting behind my brand just because I got involved. And I'm not saying get involved because, hey, you know, this will happen to you too.
Right.
But it's incredible. The good that, like, I've had so many feel good moments over the years because of the fact that I got involved. And I'm not a joiner either. You know, I'm an introvert. Like, oh God, every month when it's time to go to the Partnership for the Pathway meeting, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to go. And every time I leave the meeting, I'm like, I'm so happy I went. I'm so happy I went. But anyway, so starting in 2026, Mom's Basement is moving. And they made it clear, by the way, the city manager made it clear. He's like, we just want Mom's Basement to, and they already talked about designing the studio to be Mom's Basement, but also in downtown Texarkana.
That's so cool, man. Congrats. That's a really,
I'm so excited.
Really neat thing. We've driven through Texarkana before, but we it's not a normal route that we go, but we got to swing by.
You have to.
Like its own destination to check out.
Got to come to Mom's Basement. We've had, you know, Paula Pant has stayed here. Stacy and Andy, who are in all the Phi community stuff, have come through town. Jess and Corey, the Fioneers, have stayed with us. So there's the Cunnington wing right over here, right, Doug.
That's perfect, man. Well, I want to keep talking to you for like three more hours, but we've already gone a little long. So I wonder if there's anything else that we need to cover. Yeah, what do you got?
Yeah, let me just wrap this up by saying one thing that's big for our community. The point of all this to me is that we start in the wrong place. We chase fire so that we have this happiness later. It's not about happiness later. You need to try to begin melding. What do I like to do today? What are the opportunities that I want to take advantage of today so that when you get to the point that you RE, that you transition into another job? And frankly, I agree with Christine Benn's book that you should treat retirement like a job, just a job that you love, that you want to go to every day. And you can quit whenever you want, which is awfully awesome. But you still got to have this mission, I think, that's bigger than you. But the bigger thing is, what does this mean for managing our money today? It means two things to me. Number one is this obsession with safe withdrawal rates. And we didn't connect this bridge, Doug, but I'll just drop this bomb here. We obsess with safe withdrawal rates. We talk about it over and over and over and over. Every campfire I go to, every podcast I listen to, safe withdrawal rate, safe withdrawal rate, safe withdrawal. You know where I start with? I need to know my safe withdrawal rate number. But what I need to obsess about that nobody's obsessing about is how do I keep it together? In other words, I'm trying to stay away from the word purpose, but let's just go there. How do I make sure my life has purpose? And what does that mean in terms of my spending? And then start with that. And if I start with that, and then I look at, is that number safe? I think that's a better flow than starting with how much money can I spend? And then I'm going to spend money on BS stuff that I really don't care about because I'm placating myself because I can spend this. So I probably should. And I'm dreaming up this life that I don't, let's start with a life we care about and see if that's affordable and then make it affordable. If we can, if we can't, figure out what needs to go and what needs to stay. And I love these values conversations, but I think that, and then number two is to get there. I think we also, then the part we need to be more scientific about, which in this community, we refuse to be scientific about, is VTSAX and chill is not good enough. It isn't good. It's a phenomenal place to start. And I love JL Collins, and I'm lucky that this guy's in our community, that I've got to have, you know, great conversation with him, that he's amazing. But let's be clear about what he was doing. He was teaching young kids how not to freak out, right? There's all these investment choices. I think that book's written to tell his daughter, you know what, you don't have to freak out about investments. It's okay. Just buy one of everything and you can make, and by the way, you can be sloppy and maybe make it, but imagine if you could be part of a community and make that safe withdrawal rate so big that you can't spend it yourself and you can now help out your community. on that stuff. So maybe you can move the prairie dogs to another location. You could relocate the prairie dogs. I can build trails all over my town. You know, you can do whatever you want with this money. Like it's a powerful, powerful thing that we can use for, to build our, build the area where we live. So,
and this is the other topic that I wanted to talk to you about, which could be a whole series of like 10 episodes or something. So I'll have to figure out how to get more, more from you, but I will link up because you've covered this extensively on your show. You've talked about it more and more. And like, essentially it's the efficient frontier approach, allocation approach, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you really want it, by the way, my job is to make it fun and interesting, right? For people to go, ooh, and curious. If you really want to deep dive into this, Uncle Frank is the dude who is diving even deeper. I mean, his is called Risk Parity, but the Efficient Frontier is kind of like the landing zone for that whole more scientific approach that Frank does every day. So while I will do it sometimes and on Afford Anything, especially, Paula and I did a whole episode around the Efficient Frontier and how to understand that. Yeah. But man, if you want a deep dive, go to Frank's podcast, Risk Parity Radio.
Okay. And I actually have a note. I need to get Frank on. He was like, I'll be on the show. Yeah, check it out sometime. So
he's such Frank a cool guy.
Maybe I'll line it up for the next interview. So Joe, always amazing to chat with you. It's so much fun. Where should people find you?
You can find me at the Stacky Benjamin Show. We call it the greatest money show on earth because it's a circus. Doug's been on the show. We got to have Doug on again soon, but super, super fun. If you want a show that's meant to be money through osmosis, like I'm just going to have a good time chatting with friends in my ear about great money topics. And guess what? I learned something without even thinking about it. Like that's our teaching approach. So don't expect to hear tips per minute on the Stacking Benjamin Show. Expect to just have a good time and learn about what's going on in the community and with money.
It's the best money show on earth. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right, so my wife recently retired, like in the last year. One of our quests now is to visit national parks. And we visited all 50 states, which was cool, but now national parks. So you're a national park guy, right?
We are. 40.
40. Dang. So you're pretty close. So is this on your radar? You're going to go to all of them or you're just hitting them as you go?
Well, we got this, you know, it's a bucket list. Bucket list makes me throw up in my mouth a little bit, but we are, you know, we're like, let's go to the next one. Let's try another one. I don't know if we're going to make it to all of them, but we're already calculating like, okay, how can we make this happen?
Yeah. Very good. What were like the last couple that you went to or any highlights where you're like, I would go back to that?
Great Basin was incredible. Have you been to Great Basin?
Yes, I read y'all's blog post because we were going like weeks afterward. Fucking beautiful. It was absolutely amazing. Yeah.
I was blown away. Very cool. I was 100% blown away. I thought, you know, everybody talks about the cave experience there. That was okay. That was all right. But the true experience, man, hiking, we hiked Mount Wheeler. That was super fun. We hiked to see those super old trees. I don't even remember what they're called, but these like prehistoric trees, which was an incredible Yeah, Bristlecone. Thank you. Yeah, we hiked that. The ranger experience, the dark sky experience, like that was super cool. Did you do that when you were there?
Yep, sure did. I actually got a couple, like I'm into photography a little bit. So yeah, I was like, this is going to be awesome. It's tough to do that. But yeah, we went, they have like a whole astronomy experience thing.
It's yeah, so the gigantic telescopes. And well, we messed up because the thing we didn't plan on, Cheryl's like, I didn't check to see what the moon was going to be like. And it was very close to full moon, dude. So we got like 40 minutes of exploring the sky, and then the moon came up and they redid the telescope so that you could see the pockets on the moon. I swear to God, if there were footprints on the moon, I could have seen them. It was amazing. Yeah. Oh, people got to do that park. That was a great park.
Yeah. Super cool. It's one of the most remote parks. So there's not many people there. And we drove out there. So you drive through the desert and it's on like the loneliest highway in the US, which I think like People magazine wrote that in 1986. And then Nevada was like, yes, we're the loneliest high. They were like, yeah, let's do it. And it was a derogatory, you know, article overall.
And they owned it.
Yeah. They were like, this is awesome. So it's kind of the start there in Baker, Nevada. And there's not many restaurants. So you perhaps ate at the place that we stayed, Sandra's Taco Truck.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. No, we ate at the sit-down place like right next door.
Yeah, Salt and something.
Salt and Spice. Is it Salt and Spice? Maybe.
I don't know. There's not many restaurants. So people.
It was good though. I was surprised by how good it was for a town with two restaurants. And the ladies in that general store were also so helpful and so amazing. We got a coffee there. And Cheryl had a monster headache and they like helped her with aspirin and it was super cool.
Yeah. Highly recommended. And the one other thing I'll add, we were lucky. We ended up planning it during a new moon. So we saw the dark skies like perfectly. And the other part was it happened to be like the height of like fall foliage. And it was absolutely amazing. I mean, there's tons of aspen through there. And you were there in the summer, if I remember right.
So I was, yeah.
And probably a little bit warmer. Although it wasn't cold when we were there. I mean, it's the desert. But that Peak Wheeler is something like 13,000 feet and quite a tough hike. We didn't do it. We hiked the Cirque underneath.
The last half hour was a pain in the ass. The first half is great. And then you get on this, you get on the camel hump before the peak and you're exposed to the wind and it's windy as all get out. And then you get to the last, maybe 600 yards, 800 yards. And it's like straight up over rocks. So it isn't technical. It's just a pain in the ass. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's nothing, anybody can do this hike, but it is a pain in the ass. There were a couple times where there was snow melt still around where I thought, you know, and if you slipped, you were gone. Like you were, you know, Angel's Landing gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. That wasn't good. By the way, we got to the top there, Angel's Landing. What's it called? The spot just before it. You go up the Wiggles and then there's that, it's like the Owl's Nest or the something. But anyway, Cheryl looked out at Angel's Landing. We were at Zion. Now I just changed parks on us, everybody. But when we were there, Cheryl's like, I'm not doing okay. Angel's Landing. like forget. Have you done that one too?
No, I haven't.
No. Oh yeah. Yeah. That one. So, but my other favorite you asked about was, I think it's gotta be, or surprising was Big Bend, another super remote park. It's a tiny mountain range, the Chisos Mountains, which is might be three mountains, but it's a single range and it's all inside the park. And you get this cool, weird mix of very deserty terrain, dry terrain on the bottom. And then you hike up on top of the really what's almost like a mesa, you know, at the top of this mountain. And then you walk around and in these great valleys inside of the mesa, you get these weird Midwestern vibes. There's oak trees. I mean, there's these weird trees that you don't get in the very south of Texas and just a neat, neat, neat place.
Yeah, that one's on my list too. So, well, they're all on the list. So we'll eventually make it around. And I have a trip coming up. I invited my dad to come out to Yellowstone, which I've been to many times. We lived in Bozeman for about 4 years. So it was close enough to drive for like just a day trip on a whim. But yeah, I miss it. It's like super fun park. And I'm sure you've been there, right?
I have been there twice. A friend of mine just went 2 weeks ago though. And it's amazing until you go the first time, you have no idea just how cool it is that there's so many unique features in such a small area. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge park, but still to have the Grand Canyon, the Yellowstone, and I hate that name because it's not the Grand Canyon. It's a gorgeous canyon of its own. So to compare it is stupid, but that and all the, you know, the caldera, the, how many times did you see grizzlies when you lived there? You must have seen grizzlies a bunch.
You know what? Only a few times. Like, we didn't hike in the backcountry too much. So just on a few rare occasions, we would see a grizzly in the distance. We were able to see wolves a few times, like sometimes like super early in the morning, like we got up at whatever, 4 or 5 and found where they were. There's trackers, right? There's people that are always like following the wolves around, that sort of thing. And yeah, I was going to say there was so much stuff. The most interesting thing, I haven't seen a mountain lion anywhere else, but like we were driving near the lake area and we were like, holy shit, did you see that? Like out of the corner of our eye. And I later saw like a photographer with like a big lens. So I was like, there was like a mountain lion back there. So
oh my God.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, and they're around. Oh my God. You just never know. They're there. They're so quiet. So,
all right. Last national park question for you.
Yeah.
What's your favorite hike ever?
Man, that is a tough one. So I may default to generally in the Rocky Mountain National Park, and I'm biased because I've spent the most time here in the Rocky Mountain National Park. It's about 45 minutes away, but in college, I worked in the Trail Ridge store up at the top. So I was able to hike 2 summers worth, and you know, you're in college, so you're like, sure, I'll go for a hike, whatever. But I don't have
it. That's the highest shop in any national park, right? Isn't that the highest elevation shop in any national park? I think I read that just a couple of days ago.
I think so, because it's about right around 12,000 feet.
Yeah.
So
you're up there.
It was, yeah, super fun job to work in the summer. How about you? What's your favorite hike? Do you know?
At Grinnell Glacier hike. Bar none. Like the Grinnell Glacier hike. We got away from we started with the ranger. You got to go across 2 boats from the lodge. So you go to one boat, the whole boat gets off the boat, goes across the little isthmus and then into a second lake. And then you take the same group of people across that lake. And then you start this hike and you just go up and up and up and up to a glacier. And we saw everything. We saw mountain goats. We saw a moose. We saw the big ram's horns. Yeah. Bighorn sheep we saw. And then getting up there to the glacier and the gorgeous, just how beautiful it was over and over. And you're stepping over little baby waterfalls where you've got a 1,000-foot drop just to your left and a sheer cliff to your right. So there's a little bit of this, you know, pit in your stomach, a few of those moments. That hike had everything. It was Grinnell Glacier was great, but you got to get away from my buddy, Doug, who's Doug on the Stacky Benjamin show. Doug did it, but he was in huge groups of people the whole time. And he's like, I hated that. He's like, it was very beautiful, but it was too crowded for us. We got away from the crowd. Luckily we got there pretty early.
Right. And yeah, that's the key. Like we're going to Yellowstone in the summer, so it's going to be very crowded. And when we live close by, we would hit those shoulder seasons, especially the fall, like right before everything.
Oh, that's got to be amazing.
And, you know, with a flexible schedule, you go during the week and blah, blah, blah. It's after Labor Day. So it's just very quiet and that's the time to go. So, all right, we got to stop or we're just going to talk about national parks.
We totally will.